This year is sponsored in honor of Dov Meir Uri Ben Harav Yaakov Aaron. Shabbos for him and his entire mishpacha. For bracha tzlacha in all of their endeavors. We'll first review what we did last week, because it's very nogeya to this week, and I might even say a little bit differently than I said last week. So last week we were talking about we said, even though in the previous weeks we've been saying how if there is legitimate expenses that you incur in making a loan, you're allowed to pass them on to the borrower. But we said last week, we proved from this Ramah in the Halachas of Arvus, which we're going to go into greater detail tonight, that if one of the expenses you had was that you had to borrow money for yourself with interest in order to replace the money that you're supposed to get back that you didn't, so now you have an interest charge that you have to pay and you want to pass that on to the borrower, that you're not allowed to do. Let's see. Even though they're also, you're having a loss. You lent him $1,000, you're going to get his $1,000 back, but you lost $50 in interest that you had to pay because he didn't pay you back in time. But that's, you're not allowed to do. That we learned from the Ramah. The Taz extended it that even though you're allowed to collect expenses or damages, but if those expenses were your interest, you're the lender's interest expenses, you can't pass that on to the borrower. That's usher as a part of the Ribas Halachas. The second thing we said last week was that in a case where you're not going to pass on interest charges to the borrower per se, but you're going to take a loan for the borrower based on your credit from a non-Jew who you're going to pay interest to through your credit card, and he's going to pay the credit card company the principal plus the interest. We said that was also usher based on the second halacha, which we'll go into greater detail tonight, and that was the halacha that the Rosh said based on this Gemara that we learned, that if Reuven sends Shimon to a non-Jew to borrow money with interest, so because Shimon knows that non-Jew and Reuven doesn't, you're not allowed to do that. Reuven's not allowed to pay that interest because we look at it as if the non-Jew lent the money to Shimon, who then in turn made another loan to Reuven, because they wouldn't have lent it directly to Reuven, only because he knows Shimon. So that's one loan from non-Jew to Shimon, a second loan is from Shimon to Reuven. So we ended up that if you give someone your credit card and he's going to buy a refrigerator with it, and now at that point in time he doesn't have the money, so he's using your credit card to tell the credit card company, please lend money to my friend who was lending the money to me, so you're not allowed to pay the, even though you're paying directly to the interest to the credit card company, you can't pay directly. That was halacha number two we said last week. Halacha number three we said last week, I just make this clear, that suppose, first of all, let's just another halacha. Suppose we said that if there's a credit card company, there's a bank that has Jewish interest, you're not allowed to pay interest to it. If it's in a corporation, you're allowed to take interest payments. You can have a savings account, but you can't pay interest even if it's incorporated, as long as there is Jewish power in that corporation, or it's certainly if it's a Jewish corporation. You can't pay interest. So if suppose you have a credit card, suppose there is such a company, which some say there is in America at this point, but suppose there is such a company that has Jewish ownership, and you want to use a credit card, but to pay on time. You'll spend $100 with your credit card, and you'll pay back $100 on time. So that way you don't have to pay interest. So that's still usher, because when you use that credit card, or even when you apply for the credit card, you're telling them that I'm really, whenever I use this card, I'm going to be paying interest. Really, from the day I make the purchase, there's a 25-day grace period that wipes away that interest. But you're agreeing to pay interest. There happens to be an escape clause that says if you do this, you won't have to pay it. But you're agreeing to pay interest to a Jew, and that you're not allowed to do. Now, we spoke about the next case was that if you can properly pay interest because it's a non-Jewish credit card company, that's fine. And you're allowed to take your credit card and give it to your friend, a Jew, and tell this Jewish friend of yours, buy the refrigerator, but make sure you make the payment on time so there will be no interest charge. And that's fine also, because your relationship with the non-Jewish credit card company is kosher because you're allowed to pay interest to them. Your relationship with this Jewish friend of yours is kosher because you're lending him $1,000 and he's going to pay you just back $1,000. There's no problem over there. That we said was fine. the problem we had was, suppose he is a little bit lazy or negligent or just couldn't pay on time for some reason, and he incurred a finance charge and an interest charge. You saw your statement, and instead of him making a clean, you had a $29 finance charge plus a interest charge. So there we said, according to most poskim, you can't look at that as a loss, because it's really like two loans over here. The credit card company lent it to you, you lent it to your friend. If you had paid back in time, so that'd be fine, there'd be no interest. But for him to pay the interest expense now, and even the finance charge, because the finance charge isn't a one-time charge, it's every month they'll add $29. So that's rivis, and according to most poskim, we said he should not pay the interest, he'll pay the principal, and you'll have to swallow that loss. And we said that if he wants, he can give you a present later, as long as he follows the rules of rivis and mocheres. Okay, so that was last week. This week we want to talk about both of these gemaras. We want to talk about the email case was, suppose you can't afford, you want to make a loan, and you can't do it because you don't have enough principal. And there's two ways you can solve that problem. One is get someone to co-sign for you, have a guarantor. And the second way is to have that other person take the loan and use your property as the equity, as the security, and let him secure the loan for you in that way. And then you'll pay directly. So we're going to talk about whether these two methods are okay. And applying him to a house, if you purchase a house, there's many ways to do it. We're just going to talk about two of them. And one of them, I think this is the way they do it by high loan, someone told me, is that the owner of the house takes out a loan if he doesn't have the money, so then he has someone co-sign on the loan to guarantee it. So can you do that? And then you'll pay the loan with the interest. And the second way would be, in a case, some type of business deal that they won't lend the money to you directly, but your friend has a lot more equity to lend it to him, but you make your property as the security, will that allow you to make that loan and make interest payments to the non-Jewish lender? Right, those are the two cases we'll talk about. So first thing, let's review the Gemara we learned last week. In the first half of this year, we're going to talk about the rules of Arvus, the rules of being a guarantor. That's the first topic, and in that case, we're talking about a case where you are making the loan, and you're asking someone to be co-sign for you. That's what a guarantor is. The Gemara said, that's what we saw, the Gemara about a Braisa, they said a Jew is allowed to be a guarantor for a loan, for his friend, the Jewish borrower. So Gemara asks, Arav Laman, whom can you be a guarantor for? Ilem Arav Yisrael, if you say that your friend, the Jew, borrowed money from another Jew with interest violating the halachas of ribis, v'hatani, we learned in the Mishnah, Eila Ovrim Belosah, say these violate the halacha against making interest, Hamav, the lender, the lover, the borrower, Ha'arev, the guarantor, of Ha'edim, and the witnesses. So you certainly can't be a guarantor in a loan between two Jews, because the whole thing is usher. Elul Lenachri must be where your friend, the Jew, borrowed money from a non-Jew with interest, and they didn't trust the non-Jewish lender, did not trust your friend, the borrower. He didn't have enough equity. So you co-sign on that loan. That, the Gemara says, is mutter for one Jew to co-sign on the loan a second Jew was taking from a non-Jew. Correct the Gemara, and so it would be all over, but it's not so simple. Correct the Gemara. Kevin de dini de nochri, the alzabalsa arva, but in Goyish law, in the times of the Gemara, what happened when you were a guarantor was, and you could arrange it that way nowadays also, was according to their law, if you co-signed on the loan, you became the principal borrower, and they would come to you first for a payment. So if that's the case, you need to kashakam in revisa, so when you're paying the non-Jew the interest, as the guarantor, you're like the borrower, and you then in turn lend money to your friend who's borrowing it from you. So you borrow $10,000 from the non-Jewish person. You lent that $10,000 to your Jewish friend. He gave you back $10,000 plus $1,000 interest, which is usur. And then you're paying that $10,000 and plus the $1,000 interest to the non-Jew, which would be okay, but your relationship with the Jew was usur. So, in fact, the Gemara, since in this their law, or if there would be such an agreement where they would come to you, the guarantor, first, you cannot co-sign on such a loan. to end for the Gemara. So we're talking about where the non-Jew accepted upon himself to go with Jewish law in that case, or it was a case where he would not go to the guarantor directly. He would go first to the borrower. Only if the borrower did not have money would he go to the guarantor. I'll read your Rashi. Kivan de Nochri Basar Arva Azil, since the Nochri goes after the guarantor first. Eino Toveya El Esarev. He goes straight to the guarantor. Hu near the Shokel Ribis. Arev Zehalovim in a Nochri. So it's the Arev, it's the guarantee, the guarantor, the borrower who is paying who's taking this money from the non-Jew. V'chazav et hilvel Yisrael, and he went and re-lent it to his Jewish friend. Right, that's the way the Gemara looks at it.
Before there's any default.
Just at the time of the loan, if he can come directly to me first, me the guarantor, so we look at it as if he lent the money to me, and I in turn lent it to my friend, and my friend is then paying me principal plus interest, and I'm paying the non-Jew principal plus interest. So that part's okay, but for him to pay me, that's where the problem is. And that was Paskin Shulchan Aruch we had in the handout last week in Simen Kuf Ayin Halacha Aleph. I thought it was in this one. But anyway, the Shulchan Aruch Paskin over there that if a Jew wants to be a guarantor for another Jew borrowing money from a non-Jew, so we said, based on this halacha, you're not allowed to do it in a case where you become the major source of payment, if you become that guarantor. Now, we said last week that there were three types of guarantors in a halacha, and in Metzius there could be. For sure, that is a problem if you're called a type of arei called the shaluf dutz, which meant that you are the primary, you're mamish the primary person to collect from. So much so that if the lender would go directly to the borrower, he would say, look, the rule is you have to go to the guarantor first. Don't touch me. He's the guarantor. You have to go to him. That's the case where it's for sure asir. The case where it's for sure mutter was, we said, a regular arev, an arev stam, which is a typical case of arev where I'm guaranteeing someone else's loan, which means the lender goes first to the borrower, and only if he has no money, then he comes to me as the guarantor. So that is mutter. Now, why is that mutter? Rashi says, because if I'm just guaranteeing in case of a default, so then I can even pay the interest in that case. Because why? Rashi says, if he's yitva min alova tchila, the guy will be making his claim against the borrower first, not the guarantor. Ukashalo yimtza etzlo, only when he doesn't find money there, yigve min ha'arev, he'll collect it from the guarantor. V'hashta ein ha'arev lo v'mechila. At that type of guarantor, he is not a borrower in the beginning. Right? He's out of the picture. It's between the non-Jew and the real Jewish borrower, the one buying the house, say. Hilchuk, therefore, kipara l'nachri, if the guarantor ends up paying the non-Jew at the end because his friend didn't have the money, it's at that point he's getting into the picture and he's lending money to his friend by me paying off the principal plus the interest, whatever it's worth at that time, 100 plus 10, 110,000. So that's when the loan is taking place at that time, like you want to say in the beginning. And my demosis, I'm lending you $110,000 now as principal. Why am I lending you that much? Because that's how much you owe to my friend, to my non-Jewish company who charged you 100 plus 10. But now I came into the picture, so at that point I'm allowed to pay the whole interest and principal for sure, but I then collect it from you because I will just enter the picture now. So that was by an Arev Stam. There's a third type of Arev that's in between. That's called an Arev Kablan. An Arev Kablan is a type of guarantor where if he goes to the borrower can say, you know, go to the guarantor, you can't touch me. Not a shalav dutz. But on the other hand, the non-Jew or the lender does not have to wait for the borrower to default to collect the money from the guarantor. If it's more convenient to collect from the guarantor, he can go to the guarantor directly. He doesn't have to go to the borrower first and have him default. That's in between, and in halacha, it's a machlokis, the Shulchan Aruch brings both deyas, and the poskim say we should be machmer, like Rashi Shita, and say that it's aser, even in the case of an Arev Kaplan. Right, those are the rules of guarantors. Now, let's read the halachas of the Nosei Kelim on this. So just based on these laws of guarantor, the Shach says that if you are Arev Stam, it's okay. Once again, that Arev where he has to go to the borrower first, only if he defaults he could come to me. And he says, Lomi boy, Hilveyu kuf bikuf nun. Not only if it was a one-time fine that I'm giving you 100, I want 150 back. Elafil, his name are lost. He's the kach v'kach v'chodesh. Even if there's a percent, and he was paying, the percent was accruing every month, the 6% every month. And at the end, the borrower defaulted. You, the guarantor, can certainly pay the bank, but then you can collect that principal and the interest from the borrower, the Jew, because, like Rashi said, at that point in time, that's when your relationship with the Jew starts. You're lending him this full amount as principal now, even though to the bank it was principal plus interest, but your relationship with the Jew now starts this as complete principal, and that's mutter. Now, in the case where it's not mutter, in the case where you're an Arev Kablan, or certainly an Arev Shalom Dutz, there you have a relationship from the beginning with a non-Jew. And that becomes prohibited to make such a guarantee with another Jew. He wants to sign to make a loan with a bank. The bank won't give him the loan. You want to guarantee it. If the bank, like a case of probably with children that have no assets or income, and the parents want to help them buy a house, and they're just going to start working now, but their income isn't enough to pass the standards of getting the loan, so the parents sign as the guarantors. Now, if in that agreement it says that the bank has the right to collect from the parents first, so that would be usher for them to sign on that, because at that point they are already in a relationship with the children, that if the bank would collect from them, they are now becoming like the borrower from the bank, and they are then lending in turn the money to their children, and when the children pay the interest to the bank, that would be ribis. That's l'chora what happened. However, the Taz says a big chiddush. The Taz says that it's not really ribis right away, because there's something, there's a concept called tzad echad b'ribis. You can make a deal with someone and say, if you pay me a certain time, so then there's no interest. If you pay later, then there will be interest. So the truth is, if you would pay in time, there wouldn't be any interest. Everything would be fine. However, that's called tzad echad b'ribis, and that's also midrabanan to make such a deal. If you end up paying, it becomes osir d'oraisa if you pay the interest. If you pay on time, so then you just violated the issur d'rabbanan. So the Taz says that's the same thing over here. If the guarantor ended up never getting into the picture, if it ended up that the bank gave the money to the children, to the borrowers, and they paid to the bank directly, if that's the way it ended up, there was no interest between the two Jews, between the parents and the children, no interest ever took place. But it was still usher to do because of the tzad echad b'ribis halacha, because of that possibility that it could lead to interest. You're not allowed to make such a deal. Like we said before with the credit cards, you can't agree to pay a Jewish credit card company interest, even though you're planning on paying on time, because you're agreeing to pay interest. So here also, it's usher for the parents to make such a deal, but that's only usher midrabanan. If the parents end up paying and then collecting the money from their children, that'll be ribis ketzutzu. That'll be also midaraisa, the Taz says. But if it ends up that the children pay directly to the bank, so then it was only an issur d'rabbanan that was violated. It's aser. But that's one thing the Taz says. So based on that, the Mishnah's ribis, this contemporary posik, says that suppose you made a mistake, you didn't know these halachas, and people have been saying all along that I didn't know that was a problem. So you realize that you became a guarantor on an Arev Kablan, on someone's loan, and that was wrong. So to minimize the damage, make sure the borrower pays directly to the bank or to whoever lent the money, because that way at least it will only be an Issur d'Rabbanan. At that point, the damage was done. That was the Issur d'Rabbanan you did by paying it. But if it ends up that by agreeing to that system. But if you end up making a payment, that will become Issur d'oraisa. So at least make sure that they make all the payments, so at that point no more harm is being done than the original agreement. The issur was the agreement. The fact that they're paying it now is not an issur, because you never got involved at the end. It was really just between the bank and the children, and you never got involved. So that that's a way to minimize the damage. Okay. Now, until now we're talking where the borrower is making the deal with the bank, and they just need a guarantor to clinch the deal. What happens if it's the other way we talked about in the beginning, where the borrower is so in debt, so worthless, that they can't make any deal at all? They're buying the house will be in their name, but no bank will even look at them, and they want to make a deal, they get some arrangement somehow to do it, that someone else will guarantee the loan, they'll guarantee the loan, and the security will be on the house that the children own. The parents will be the borrowers. As far as the bank's concerned, the security will be on the house, and the children say, look, but we'll pay, we'll make all the payments. Now, if the parents own the house, and you know, that'd be one easy way to make it mutter without any problems, the parents could buy the house themselves, own the house, and just let the children live in it and charge them rent, which happens to be the monthly payments that they would have to pay. That's no ribbons problem, that's fine. But let's talk in a way, you got a bank to make a deal, and people said that that does happen, there's ways of getting banks to agree to this, that the children will own the house because they're doing all the schlepping and fixing and they're buying the house. But when it comes to settlement, they're not the ones who have the mortgage because they don't have any money, so it's the parents are getting the mortgage for them. So that's a Beferish Halacha in Shulchan Aruch that we learned about last week, and that we can see again inside. This is this Halacha in Simen Kuf Samaches through Tes. The way I saw that, why is it called Simen Kuf Samaches through Tes? In the Shulchan Aruch it has both Kuf Samaches through Kuf Samaches on top of the page. In the Torah also. And it says there because there are different ways of counting the simanim over there. From Kuf Samach through Kuf Ayin, there were different ways of counting it. So by putting Samach Ches and Tes together, when you get to Kuf Ayin, everyone holds Kuf Ayin as Kuf Ayin. But everything Kuf Samach is Kuf Samach. In between, there's questions which ones, so they just put this is Samach Ches and Tes and try to even it up. So anyway, in Sif Yod Zayin, we had this halach by the Shulchan Aruch. This is Mamish this case. Yisrael Shamer Lechaveiro. A Jew told his friend, Laveli Mos Me'akam Beribis. Look, I can't get a loan. They won't look at me. But I want you to borrow money from that non-Jew with interest. So, Inosan Lo Mashkin Lilvas Olav. If the borrower, we'll say the children in this case, have a mashkan with which they could borrow, say the house. So then the halacha is as follows. Im achrayis ha'akam al ha'mashkan delvad. If the non-Jew can only collect from this mashkan, this is where his lien is on. It's only on this property owned by the children. Below al shliach klal, he has no way of collecting from the agent, from the parents, at all. Hareza mutar l'shliach likach haribis. It's permitted for that shliach to take the interest from his children, vilitna la'akam, and make the payments to the bank every month. Because the security is completely on the house, and the parents have no responsibility at all. However, imlo nasan lo mashkan, but if there is no security, then it's aser. I think we said last week, that was the problem with the credit card. Elim kein amelo, unless he would say, la'vila mos beribis ma'ev kuchavim, unless somehow the children, it's not a case of children, it's a case of a millionaire who says, borrow money from this non-Jew, Ashmi, because he knows me. And the non-Jew knows me, and he says, okay, I know him, he just can't make it, so I'll give you the money to give to him. So then you're just like a mailman. You're not doing anything as the middleman. But the main halacha we want to talk about is the first case. And that first case is telling us, first of all, like we learned last week, you can't have a credit card, you can't use someone else's credit card, you can't, because what you're doing is you're saying, the Visa company, I don't have a relationship with the Visa company, but you do, so I'm telling you, can you please go to Visa and borrow money from me with interest and I'll make the payments? So that's usur. Right, that's because we look at it as a double loan. We're looking at it as a loan from Visa to the cardholder, and then we're looking at it as a second loan from the cardholder to the borrower, to the purchaser. Now, here's not tzarech of ribis, this is mamish ribis, because the relationship, it's not like, well, if he ends up paying directly, so then there was no interest, no harm done. Here there is harm done, no matter what, because the Visa did not lend any money to the purchaser, they don't know him. Visa only knows the cardholder. So here, this is ribis automatically, because they don't know the other person. They're giving it directly to their Jew that they know, and then Jew number one is giving it to Jew number two and asking for ribis. That is completely usur, even if it paid directly. You know, there's no way that will be, well, solid. This is ribis automatically. The good news, though, is that we have this halacha of mashko now, and that is that over here, if I, the purchaser, have a security that I could use, which will secure the loan, so then even though they don't know me, they only know the borrower, they know my parents, but in that case I can make the loan. Now, the lashon of the Shulchan Aruch was, Im achrayis ha'akam al ha'mashkan delvad, if the security of the non-Jew is on the mashkan alone. The Shach points out that if you look in the tour, the Torah doesn't say that. The Torah just says, if we assume that the non-Jew relies on the mashkon. So he asks, why did in the Shulchan Aruch does it say that it has to be in writing, that the security of the non-Jew is on the mashkon alone? So the Shach says there's two types of securities, there's two types of mashkon. There's a mashkon which is not worth as much as the loan is worth. So in that case, you can't say, well, probably the non-Jew is relying on the security to secure his loan because it's not worth enough. In that case, you have to get it in writing from the non-Jew that I'm only relying on this security, otherwise it'll be a problem. The second case is talking, which is probably the case with most houses, at least it used to be, that you couldn't get a mortgage unless the house was worth the value of the mortgage plus at least a year or two worth of interest. It used to be 80%, and you have to get insurance for the rest. That's generally, that's the way it should work. A house, and a regular first mortgage, a house is worth enough to pay for the entire loan plus interest for a good few years. So in that case, if the mashkon is that strong, it's such a mashkon, the lashon of the shach, it's a mashkon tov, it's a good mashkon, that it's so good that it's equal in value to the whole loan plus all the interest that will be paid, not all 30 years, because that you'll never have the interest as well more than, but at least for a couple of years until they would default and start taking the house away. So if the mashkin is that good, so then you're allowed to have someone else take the loan out. Because I, the borrower, I, the children, don't have any money. But I had this house that I bought. I just can't get a loan from the bank. So I can have my parents or some other rich friend secure the loan, and they'll, because they know that person, but the assumption will be that the bank will only collect from that that house, and that will be permitted. That's what the shach says. Now, what happens though, let's go back to the first topic, what happens if the parents can't get away with just saying, okay, lend money to my children and just take security from the house and leave me alone, don't touch me? The bank says, we want to touch you also. We want you to be responsible. We want you to guarantee the loan also. Besides the house, suppose the house burns down, suppose something happens, we want you to guarantee the loan. So in that case, the shach says clearly, since the Shulchan Aruch said, the achraita of the non-Jew has to be on the mashkan, below al ha-shliach klal, not on the shliach at all. And the shach says that means he certainly can't consider the middleman, the parent, the borrower, and he can't even consider the parents an arev kablan. He can't even consider the parents a guarantor. Right, that's what the shach says. The shach says that even though we have this heter now, if you have a mashkan, a good mashkan, that's worth the value of the loan plus the interest, you're allowed to send your middleman to take the loan, but if that middleman becomes a guarantor, it becomes usur. That's the halacha of the shach. The Chavos Das explains this is even worse than the case we spoke about earlier. Because in the case we spoke earlier, there was at least a machlokis, whether you could be an Arif Kablon, or it was only a problem to be an Arif Shalom Tutz. Because there, it was the borrower taking the money directly from the non-Jewish bank, and the guarantor was co-signing. So there was a sheet that said, if you're only an Arif Kablon, that middle type of Arif, it's okay. Over here, where it's the middleman who's actually taking the money from the bank, That's what the Chavis Da says over here, where the middleman is taking the money from the bank. So in that case, you cannot even be an Arev Kavlan according to everyone. If you're any guarantor other than an Arev Stam, you're not allowed to make this deal. But you can be a regular Arev, that if they go to the borrower first, the children, and the house, and then finally they come to you, so then you enter the picture, like we said before, that'll be okay. But if you're any type of Arev Kavlan, that somehow, if they come to you first, for sure it's no good. But even if they have the right to come to you and the children equally, you're not allowed to take that loan, because we're back to that Arif problem, and it's even a little worse here since you took out the money yourself. Now that would be bad news, because that would knock out this whole system, because in most cases, if you're taking the loan from the bank, they want to know where you work, and they want to know your assets also. That's the whole point. Otherwise, they would just rely on the house and with the children. They want your assets. However, Dayan Weiss, they bring down, says that there is a little bit of a kula here, and that is, what's the mitzias? You have to just go with the mitzias. The reason that it's also the Chavis Da says is because we have to assume that the bank is going to go to you first. That's what happens. They can go to either one first. They'll probably go to you because you have the money and the children don't have the money. They might not want to foreclose the house. They'll come to you first. But if the mitzias is, the deal is clearly that they cannot go to you. They have to go to the house first. And if there's no money in the house, they have to go to the children. Only then can they come to you. So then we go back to this halacha that says clearly that if there's a mashkan that's worth the value of the whole loan, and you are not an arev kavlan at worst, the only thing you might be is an arev or nothing at all. You could be a stam arev. But as long as you're not an Arif Kavlan, they're not going to come to you first. And they can't even come to you without you saying, go to them first. And only when they default, I'll pay you. So then you're allowed to make such an arrangement. So based on that, the host can look at these mortgages in different ways now. This Major Vahalofa from the Machon Ara and Munsi. He says, even though, and immediately I'm just saying what they're saying, but it all really will depend on the mitzvahs between each individual loan, but just to know what the rules are and to get a taste of the possible problems. The way he looks at it is like this, that even though the parents will be signing the application and they'll be looking at their assets, and it could be they're even caught in our kavlan in halacha, because the bank can technically come to them first because they are guaranteeing it. But he says, according to at least civil law in Munsi, you have the right as the guarantor to say, what do you mean? There's a security in the house here. You have to go to the house first before you come to me. And before they come to you, they have to get a court order and to allow them to collect from you the house. They can foreclose as a right because they have a mortgage on the house. But to you, they have to get a court order, and it's a whole system they have to follow, procedures to be able to do that. So even though technically you might be called a guarantor, you're an Arev Kavlan, but the Maisa, the Mitzias is that you're not, because they have to go to the house first, and you can just deflect any kind against you by sending them to the house. So that fits this criterion of if the Mashkin is worth as much as the loan and the Ribbis, and you are not responsible for the loan, so then you can make the deal for your children. That's what he says. The Mishpat HaRibbis quotes Vosner. He wants to say that it's not good, because even though the Chavis Da said that we go by the Mitzias, and if the guy's not going to take it from you directly, it's okay. That's in the first case we spoke about, where the money was borrowed by the children and you were guaranteeing on it. That's where the Chavis Da says, if he's not going to touch you first, you have a right to deflect him over there, so then we don't look at the fact that you signed as an Arev Kavlan, even though you signed as an Arev Kavlan, but since the Mitzias is that you can deflect him to the house, that's okay. But in the second case we've been talking about, where you took the money, you took out the loan, you took out the mortgage, the parents took out the mortgage, and they are just saying, well, the children are paid direct, so that the Chavis Das doesn't go so far to allow you to make such a loan, because it's too much, it looks too messy already. You took the loan, and they're trusting you, you're an Arev Kavlan, so what? You can say, well, go to the house, but they gave you the loan because they gave you the money, the money was written, the check was written out to you, and you're responsible. You could deflect them to the mashkin, but that's not enough. That would still be problematic. Now, in the first case also, the Mishnah's Rebbe is another, everyone looks at it a different way. He says that technically it should work, especially in the first case, in the first type of case where the children sign the mortgage and you're just guaranteeing it because the mashkin is worth enough money and they're guaranteeing it. You're just an Arev. The bank will go to you first. But he says you have to really see the Mitzvahs. And he gives an interesting example that was Nagela Maisa. He says, suppose the house that you're buying is a shul, and the shul doesn't have any money. And what the shul wants to do is, if we don't have any money, you go to someone and say, look, you have assets, can you get the mortgage and we'll make the payments. So based on the whole logic here, we'll say, well, that's okay, because we have a mashkin tov here that's worth of the value of the whole loan. And this person who's securing the loan will say, even though he's an Arev Kavlan, he could always send them over to the house first, because the house is worth enough. But the Mishnah Rebbe says, he lives in New York, he knows what's going on, he says, banks don't want to foreclose on a shul. Banks don't want to foreclose because it makes them look bad. And they will not, even though technically speaking the house is the security for the loan, but since the reality is the bank will not foreclose on the shul except as a last resort, they'll go to the guarantor first, so then it would be prohibited for a shul to ask someone to guarantee a loan because they need to purchase this building. Right, that will be prohibited. So it all depends on the Mitzvah. So we'll just review the rules. It didn't apply to our case. Our case was okay. Now, just review the rules to know. We talked about two types of ways that you would want to borrow money when you can't do it yourself. The first one is just get someone to guarantee the loan for you, co-sign it. So that we saw there's three types of co-signers. And if the bank or the lender could go directly to the co-signer, that's for sure usher. Even if he has a choice of going to the co-signer or the borrower, we said it's a machlokas, but most poskim say even that's usher. The fact that he could go to the co-signer first, that already gives a relationship between the co-signer and the borrower, even though we said it's only tzarechavir, but if the borrower will end up paying directly, so then it shows it's retroactively that the co-signer, the guarantor, had no relationship here. But just to get into a relationship like that is prohibited. We said in case someone made a mistake, it's best for the borrower to pay directly to the bank to avoid future problems, because then it keeps the lender out of the picture. So that was the first method. The second method is in cases where you can't secure a loan, they won't even talk to you. You need someone else who has bigger money to get the loan for you. So that's for sure prohibited, because that's a double loan. The wealthy person is borrowing money from the bank, and he in turn is giving it to the poorer person. Those are two separate loans, so that's 100%. Also, Rivas Katsutsa, also Daraisa. The only heter is if the borrower has a security that's worth the value of the loan, so then we say that's permitted as long as the middleman is not a guarantor even of both types, of Arev Kavlan or Shalom Zutz. You can't be that type of guarantor, because then again, we look at it at the problem we said again, that becomes a dual loan again. We did say, though, that even if he might technically be a guarantor, if the Mitzias is that the bank will collect only from the house, and he has the right to say, I'll be your halachas, you have to go to the house first and leave me alone, and they have to get a court order, so then he's not considered a guarantor, he's just considered an Arustam, and it could be that it will be okay. And certainly, if the children would pay directly to the bank, and he's can't be touched, so that would be a proper way, even without a heteriska. However, if the reality is the bank can go directly to the guarantor, which could be in many cases, like we said, a shul, any type of public building that they won't want to close down, and they'll go to the guarantor first, or the agreement says that they can go. However, if the laws in the state is it's not so hard to go to the guarantor. If the person has assets, they could just take him, especially if he has money in the bank, they could just take his money and finish. So in that case, even though the mashkin is worth the whole value, the house is worth the whole value of the loan, and all the interest that will be paid for a good few years, since the likelihood is that the bank will collect from the guarantor first, you're not allowed to be such a guarantor of a loan, even though the mashkin is there. I hope that makes it simple.